give you a little insight as to how we got involved with ministry with retarded people. We say with retarded people and not for, because the whole idea of their ministry, of our ministry being together with them, and that they bring unique gifts to parish life also. I got started back in Iowa and was asked, I'm a lay minister of education, was asked to get involved in an ecumenical Christian education program with mentally retarded people. And not knowing much about mental retardation and feeling completely inadequate, I said no, but they encouraged me to take part in it, so I stuck with it. And how I got excited about it was that my neighbor, had an old neighbor, lived by himself. His wife was out at the county home for a while. She then passed away. He became very sick, and he admitted himself to the county home. And in Iowa, most every county in Iowa has a county home system. And the county homes, I did not know until I went out there. I thought a county home was where destitute people, poor people could go for some care in preparation for their death, or temporary care if immediate family couldn't take care of them. So I visited out there, and my old neighbor was down in the basement, and he had been sick, and they put all the sick people down in the basement of the county home. And as I went down there, I happened to go down this long hallway that wasn't lit and had small basement window. There wasn't much light in there, and I looked in one of these rooms, and there I saw this bent and twisted body laying on a rubber mattress in a large crib, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I knew it was a human being, and really pondered about it. And I finally asked a nurse, "So what? Who is that in that room?" And they say, "That's a profoundly retarded person that's been here since birth. They're about 19 years old, and there they were stuck in the basement of the county home." As I found out later, our county home in Iowa had not only old people that were preparing to die, who might have been destitute or poor and couldn't afford adequate care, nursing care, in town at one of the better nursing homes, but it also had mentally retarded people there from age birth to old age. It also had emotionally handicapped youth there who had family problems. The mental health clinic, of all people, built a wing on the county home for children who keep running away from home and their parents can't handle them, so they stick them in this wing at the county home. So the county home had was just a melting pot of people with all kinds of problems, all kinds of needs, and I was just shocked to see that these retarded people there with all these old people preparing for death was there with emotionally upset children, there with delinquent children. So looking for a cause, I became an advocate, I guess, for mentally retarded people. And right away we talked about the possibilities of a group home where these people could live, could take care of themselves, could be an important part to our community. So I got involved from that angle, then moved to Phoenix, Arizona, where the parish that I'm at now has had for several years now a Christian education program for mentally retarded. And then while I was there, parents started asking, how come our mentally retarded youth are not confirmed? And all the other retarded, or all the other normal youth are confirmed. We would like to have confirmation for our mentally retarded youth. And then at the same step, they were saying, we would also like our youth to commune, to share in commune. Why not? And the question that I raised was, why not? And so we worked on, my wife and I worked on some curriculum, because curriculum is very scarce, and because there's a wide gamut, mental retardation from a profoundly retarded bed patient, all twisted, barely alive, living off the cortex of their brain, to someone near normal. And their mental retardation range is wider than the normal range. And there are no two mentally retarded people alike. They're similar but not alike. And that's one fallacy that normal people have, is that we tend to categorize mentally retarded people as being mentally retarded. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Now that I've given you some insight to my wife and I would like to go into, I have sort of a lecture form that I'd like to use this morning. And I will stop and at that time give you an opportunity for some questions. And if you're taking notes or not taking notes, I have a conclusion all written up, hopefully, that puts together everything that I tried to say, or my wife and I tried to say to you this morning. And I also will give you some bibliography or some book titles if you're interested in this. There are lots of pamphlets like these put out by various agencies, either government agencies, that are very good. If you're a pastor or working in a parish, several of these I would suggest to you to give you a better understanding of the mentally retarded person and their family, particularly. Okay, I'd like to start now. Before we begin to discuss ministries with retarded people and plugging them into the mission of the church, we must first understand who they are. And in working with retarded people and working with normal people in the community, the biggest block that comes is that we normal people do not know or understand retarded people. And I think that's, if everyone was to ask you, what would you like, and people would respond, I just want people to know who I am, or people to understand me. I just want to be understood. And so maybe we should begin with a definition of what mental retardation is. How many here know it? A good clinical definition of mental retardation. I'm sure if I asked you, everyone would probably say a good definition would be a below average IQ, anything below average IQ. What's average? IQ tests are dangerous. I can tell you how dangerous they are. Anything below 90 is considered mentally retarded. Mildly, it goes from mildly to moderately to severely to profoundly. And to give you an example, in our parish we have a gal who's 28 years old. She has been involved, she started school back in Pennsylvania. She was classified as being mentally retarded. Her parents had some own personal problems. Her father now is an alcoholic, probably was an alcoholic then too. And the mother is a typical partner of an alcoholic who sort of ignores everything that's going on and defends the husband. She was classified as being retarded. I don't know what series of tests she was giving. Then they moved to Maryland. From Maryland, they moved to Phoenix, Arizona. And Phoenix, then when she came as 16, they just didn't bother putting her in school. Now, I'll be sharing with you some other things. A lot of states, education for mentally retarded people is not mandatory. Some states do not have to offer an education for anyone with an IQ lower than 90. A lot of states do now. Just since 1971, Pennsylvania was the first state, followed by the District of Columbia. But it's not federal law yet. There is legislation working that it will become federal law soon, hopefully, that all states, all school districts rather, must offer a public education to all people up to age 18. So this girl came to Phoenix at 16, did not bother going into school. Parents kept her out of school, just kept her at home. She became a domestic around the house, sort of a servitude type thing. You clean the house, take the dog out for a walk, etc. Then she got into a workshop program. She got her driver's license. She tried to get a job, but she had some social problems. Socially, she just could not cope with other people. Then we got her into a workshop program about 2 years ago. In order to go into a workshop program, you have to take an IQ test. If your IQ falls below 90, you get accepted. It was a federal program. The girl took the IQ test and scored 102 on it. It was the first IQ test that she had in 10 years. She scored a 102 on it, which made her which disqualified her from the program. She was learning how to be to work in cafeteria type work. The plan was she would have gone through the program. She would have gotten a job possibly in a restaurant or cafeteria, made her $80 to $120 a week, got a little apartment, lived by herself, became a productive citizen. She has no training at all now. Consequently, she's back living with her parents. She is going to a community college in Phoenix, and she doesn't know what she's preparing for. And she is getting by with C's and an occasional B, taking a lot of English and reading and some math. So here's a gal, 28 years old, just got caught in the middle of it all. She probably was not retarded. She probably had a learning disability and probably had some emotional and social adaptive problems. But she was classified as mentally retarded and consequently was put in an inadequate program, an inadequate schooling program, and then the parents were just frustrated at the fact that they did not put her back into public education at age 16. They just removed her from the schools. And then at about age 22 or 23, she tried to work in the workshops, the sheltered workshop setting. So that's an example, that's a danger of classifying people who are mentally retarded, particularly in the mild area, in the high 80s or low 90s. IQ tests are very dangerous. Here's a definition by the American Association on Mental Deficiency, and they define mental retardation as this: significantly, that's the key word, significantly sub-average general intellectual functioning, existing concurrently with deficits in adaptive behavior manifested during the developmental period, during the early years, say birth through early adolescence. A simpler definition from the National Association for Retarded Citizens, and this is one that you can probably remember, is that a mentally retarded person is one who functions intellectually at a below average rate and experiences unusual difficulty in learning, social adjustment, and economic productivity. Mentally retarded people have various levels of potential that can be reached. Just because a person is classified as mentally retarded does not necessarily mean that the first thing parents do is they throw their hands up when the doctor comes out and says, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, you have a Down syndrome child, and the parents just fall apart. But there are various levels of potential that a child can reach or when they become an adult. A mentally retarded person may be a person in bed who is just barely living off the cortex of their brain. The cortex is the only functioning part of their brain, and that's just enough to keep their feeble heart beating, probably having no consciousness of him or herself. This is a profoundly retarded person laying in usually a fetal state in a bed. Their potential might be, they do have potential though, their potential might be to improve their organism's functioning, the heart beat, their kidneys, etc. They could possibly live free from machines. They could even possibly discovering themselves by long fingernails. I've heard nurses tell stories about profoundly retarded having long fingernails, and they scratch themselves, and when they scratch themselves, they jump, and they might become aware of themselves by little things like touching. Or some of them might be able to pick their head up. If you lay in the bed, you look and you see the ceiling. And how can you possibly grow? How can you possibly learn laying in bed looking at the ceiling? It's not till you get your head up and you're able to look around. We have a little child now, and just in the last few days we've noticed that his eyes have been picking up things. If you make a noise, he'll start to search for the noise. And you look at the birth of the growth of a child, they'll begin to pick their head up, they'll look around, they'll see things. From that point, their growth can rapidly begin. That's why we have a lot of physical therapy that goes on with mental retardation too, so that we can get their bodies to be as normal as possible, so that they can get up and walk around and look around and move, get their head muscles built up. So their potential is very small, but yet they have potential. And even if it's in the course of their lifetime to pick their head up and look around the room and see that light comes in through a window, or see that there are different shapes, things around them, that's potential, and that's potential that they have a right to reach. Or a mentally retarded person might be someone who is near normal in their intellectual functioning, and they are capable of handling fairly difficult tasks in various occupational levels. They're socially adaptive, they can marry, they usually have children in some cases, they have some skills that are superior to ours. Some retarded people I can think of a fella that works a drill press, and he has a fantastically strong body. He has, if you look at his body, it is built a little different than the average person's body, and because of this bone structure, muscle structure, he has superior strength capabilities in working this type of a machine that is needed. Some of them, their minds don't wander as much as maybe a normal person does, and they can zero in on one task quicker than ours. They can do some of the boring jobs, like a drill press operator, drilling holes all day long, and they can get gratification from that, whereas sometimes we feel that it might be boring. They get a tremendous feeling of satisfaction, and it is an important task. You know, we need someone to drill holes and to do the little simple things. The label mental retardation covers all persons who fit in between these two extremes. So you see how widely the area is, more so than a normal person. We can get a group of normal people together, and we wouldn't dare want to guess what their IQ was or what their levels of potential was, because we can talk socially together, we look similar, we feel that we are more alike. But the mentally retarded person, is they're more disalike. You know, you go from a profoundly bad person to a person who is near normal functioning in society. The difficulty of understanding mentally retarded people is that their range and capabilities are much wider than ours. And I told you about the four levels. We have the mild, the moderate, the severely, and the profound. Also, there are other terms like educable and trainable when you get into education. Educable are those that can learn to read, those that can learn to write. And trainable are those that can be trained to do tasks, dress themselves, possibly take care of themselves, possibly relate to various symbols. Those of you that will be sitting in on our reaffirmation of baptism on Wednesday and Friday, we'll be talking about teaching retarded youth confirmation and Christian education, and we'll be looking at various types of curriculum and how we can adapt curriculum or write curriculum to meet trainable or educable youth's needs. Okay, I'll just stop now. Why don't you ask some questions if you have some?
When you were talking about at the first part, knowing and understanding that person. At school, every Saturday night, I have a friend, and I have a problem with severely retarded, and it's funny how the communications develop between us. There's no verbal communication, though I don't use words, but it's almost frightening, because there's all kinds of communication that can go on when we walk together or work together, or something like that. And it outstrips anything else, and sometimes it gets to the point where it's really frustrating. I know for this little boy, and it's frustrating for me too. And in trying to understand and go to that person, the barriers are so great that sometimes you wonder if it's worth it or if they should operate on the level that they can. And he was much happier, I think, being with the other retarded children that he lived with than being with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but him staying with his retarded community does not offer an opportunity for him to grow. For growth, it would be like me staying in my house and with my family. I feel much more comfortable with my wife and my children rather than going out and meeting new friends who are different than me. Mm-hmm. And by you making a friendship with him, you're making a friend who is different than you, a friend that you can learn from, and you're giving him an opportunity to make a friend with someone who is different from him and possibly learn something.
outside too, that a lot of the children, they know that they're different. You know, they're aware that sometimes people say, well, do retarded people realize that they're not the same? And most of them, I think, really do. And I think that it's really, really great for them to have other people. They get to know what you're like and what other things are like outside of their own world. And they feel accepted, and that's really important.
What do you feel about people putting moderately retarded people children into homes? A lot of them say, well, we like to keep them until they're six, and then it's too hard on the others in the family, so they put them in a home. Well, I feel it's good for the others in the family. That's my opinion. But how do you feel about that?
Yeah. I would like to know what the family is like. If the family is having problems because of this child, in the husband and wife relating to each other and the children, you know, having problems with siblings, I would like to know what the problems are.
Well, I can think of two different families.
Yeah.
One, they lived upstairs from me for 6 years, and their second daughter is mentally retarded to a fairly high degree. After, I think now she's 17, she still cannot write her name. She can make a J and it comes out the wall. That's as far as she can go on her knee. And but she can function. She can take care of herself. She still wets the bed, but that's a minor problem. I think every child, many children will never outgrow that at that particular point of retardation. But she can wash dishes. She's excellent at that. And she's pleasant to be with.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole family handles her very beautifully, because of the way she is.
Mm-hmm.
But then I can think of another family, very similar type of child, but the other children are embarrassed by her. They feel they just as soon not have people know that is their sister. And the parents are constantly covering up for her.
I'm not saying that there's not a time when a moderately child could be placed in a home. I guess I'm opposed to homes in some respect. I think homes are needed for profoundly and severely retarded people. But I feel that moderately people should be living in a group home setting with maybe five or six together, and then a normal set of parents with them to give them guidance and assistance and communicate. But this is another thing to note. In most families with retarded children, there are many problems, many family problems between husband and wife, between siblings, and it takes a strong family, you know, to deal with a moderately and even a mildly retarded person. I mean, just think how much friction there is in families with teenagers, normal teenagers. You know, parents tend to give up on normal teenagers. One of the tragic things I see in working with youth is that, you know, parents letting a 13 or a 14-year-old girl, or in most cases a girl, you know, just say, the heck with it. You know, you want to live like that, you live like that, and sort of giving up being a parent to that child. And you see this often with parents of retarded children. They look for a place to pass the child off to that they know they'll be taken care of. That's another fallacy. Normal people think that all institutions that take care of mentally retarded people are okay, and they are not. I just told you a case about the county home, and I think that really got me upset was to know that all these mentally retarded people in the county home, I would like to have known what the family situations were like. Maybe the parents were at an old age when they had this child, and now the parents have died, and it's the only place for the for this adult, the retarded adult. I don't know. But if it's a case where parents want to remove the child because it's creating friction in the marriage or friction amongst siblings, there's counseling available. And I even feel that pastors, the clinical training that they've had, they can handle this type of counseling. A lot of pastors are afraid of it, though. Okay, one more question, and move on.
Friend of mine, her sister's like 22, 23, and she is completely in trim. She doesn't talk, or they have to change her. And Now her parents are getting up in age, and she's very, very dependent on her mother and father. Well, what is going to happen to that her
okay.
when her parents pass away or are no able to lift her? They have to carry her.
Right. I find it hard to believe, first of all, that parents can go along for 20 years and then realize and say, oh my God, what am I going to do with this kid when they get 25 or 30 years old? It's got to be in the back of their mind at an early age. And I think that this is an option that parents ought to be looking before a child, before they become a young adult, as to what we're going to do. You know, I'm 68, my husband's 72, the child's 28, you know, what's going to happen when we die? And I think that there are a lot of homes and institutions that give good care that are available, and these should be sought out. Okay, let's look at some causes quickly here. What time do we have here? Quarter after? Okay. What causes mentally retardation might be another question that we can look at. Mental retardation can be caused by any condition that hinders or interferes with the development before birth, during birth, or in early childhood years. There are more than 200 known causes for mental retardation. There are 200 known causes. But only 80 of these 200 are clearly determined. In other words, a doctor can look at the child and say, this is a Down syndrome child. Or look at a child and say, this child is a rubella baby because the mother had German measles the first 3 months of pregnancy. And some of these 80 are rubella, are the Down syndrome, syphilis, various social diseases, the syphilis, and there's some other strains that are suspected of creating chromosome abnormalities, which bring about retardation. Physical malformations, such as a small brain, possibly a weak heart, not pumping enough blood to the brain, blue babies that are born and brought back can have brain damage at childbirth. There are various childhood diseases. Meningitis would be one also. Physical abuse, child battering, is another big cause of mental retardation. Lead poisoning. Lead poisoning is still with us. Even though we have lots of water-based paints, lead poisoning is still a problem. Diet, poor prenatal care. Mothers might be alcoholics or heroin addicts or just don't eat properly, maybe smoke a lot. A lack of stimulation, having a baby and a mother not holding it, having a baby and just letting it sit there, not giving it any type of stimulation. One frightening statistic is that in the United States, one in every 600 born have some type of chromosome abnormality, either from moderate to severe, so that we're talking about the possibility of 1 in 600 births in the United States being a mentally retarded child, baby. That number is higher than 1 in 600 because I've mentioned other things that occur here after childbirth, such as child abuse, lead poisoning, poor diet, lack of stimulation. That figure can get up to about 3 in 600. Is the ratio that we're talking about. Mental development, like physical development, is prompted by the right kind of activity and stimulation and is retarded when it is lacking. The early years are the most important years for the nervous system and the developing of languages. So keep that in mind. The most important years for the mentally retarded is to diagnose this child as soon as possible. And when it's diagnosed mentally retarded, to involve yourself in various programs and stimulation that will enable it physically, mentally, and emotionally to develop, to begin its development. Mental retardation cannot be cured, and that's something you remember. No false hopes for parents. They have to hit that tough realization that mental retardation cannot be cured. But that certain growth potential that each mentally retarded baby is born with still remains there to be obtained, and that's the encouragement the parents should be giving. Not that we put the baby off in an institution somewhere, but that we as parents try to develop this potential that it has, whether it be lifting its head and looking around, or whether it be becoming a productive citizen and working. To understand retarded people, we must first realize that they all have potential for growth. So in order for you to ruin, you look at a retarded person, a retarded baby, realize that that baby does have potential, that it's not the end of the world, that it's not a vegetable, that it has potential. No matter how great or small, it still has potential, and it is a major accomplishment, and it's a right, and I can't say that enough. It's a right for every mentally retarded person to have that opportunity to achieve that potential, that worth, that self-being, and that dignity that we all hopefully accomplish in our lifetime. The major stumbling block for growth amongst mentally retarded people, what do you think the major stumbling block is for the major barrier for mentally retarded people is? What do you think it is? Okay. You're close. That's one. Their greatest barrier is not their mental handicap. Their greatest barrier is you and I, is normal people. Normal people and their attitudinal barriers are what keep mentally retarded people from reaching their growth potential. Our misinterpretation, what, you got a comment?
No, I have a question. How do you recognize, how can you tell what a retarded person's growth potential is? When you help them achieve it, or if they have, or if they don't?
If they can do a new thing or learn a new thing each day or over a period of time, then you know that that they've accomplished some growth.
What if there's no pleasure in anything? Like Anne was talking about that frustration.
Okay, that frustration is your attitudinal barrier. You're frustrated.
I'm having a little trouble. I appreciate the growth potential and that being important, but I think that even without that growth potential, somehow there's an acceptance of the person where they're at and appreciation and love for them there, not just in terms of where they can go, but in terms of who they are. A Down syndrome baby that maybe lives for 12 months and doesn't learn a whole lot, but still is somebody just by virtue of
right. Their
existence. I mean, that,
okay. But their potential would be to maybe feel loved by the mother holding it close to her breast, or possibly sensing various things around them. That's potential. And if they do sense those things, that's growth. It's hard to measure, if that's what you're asking, how do you measure? It's hard to measure.
What's the same for normal people, isn't it? What's your potential too? You just keep trying.
Okay, so some of these stumbling blocks, these attitudinal barriers, are misinterpretation. Misinterpretation from the fact is that we say that this person is mentally retarded. Well, we don't know to what degree they're retarded, but we don't have an understanding of what mental retardation is, so we misinterpret it. Some people even get mental illness in with mental retardation, and vice versa. And just like mentally ill people don't want to be called retarded, retarded people don't want to be classified as mentally ill. I can give you a case of that. Theon Jackson versus the state of Indiana. 27-year-old fella at the time was arrested for armed robbery of $10 from two young gals. The state said that he was mentally incompetent to stand trial. They put him in a state hospital for the mentally ill. The fellow was mentally retarded. Now, when you're incompetent to stand trial, you can stay in there forever. If he had been diagnosed as being mentally retarded and been recognized as mentally retarded, he could have been treated differently. he was not given a trial. His rights were violated, and it's a class action suit that came upon. This fellow was classified. He was mentally retarded, the classified being mentally retarded, mentally ill, stuck away with mentally ill people. A big difference. Misinterpretation. Lack of understanding is another attitudinal barrier. Lack of understanding on the people that classified this fella. Prejudices. You know, we talk about prejudices. Boy, you know, how many of you feel squirmy or wormy around some retarded people? And there are a lot of normal people that do, that avoid them. We're opinionated about them. Some of us are afraid to be around retarded people. We just don't know how they're going to act. You know, maybe they're going to hurt my child. If I take my small child around a group of them, maybe one of them will physically abuse them. It's terrible. And we're sort
they
of...
Can.
Pardon?
They can.
So can a normal person.
Yeah.
Just because retarded doesn't mean that they have a greater capability of physical... Pardon?
A retarded person is going to adhere to those social rules that you can assume a normal person would.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about normal people now. We're not talking about retarded people. We're talking about normal people who have attitudinal barriers that suppress retarded people from reaching their potential. Lack of constructive compassion. Oh, I feel so sorry for that family. They have a retarded kid. You know, that is not constructive at all. You know, it might be compassionate, but it's not constructive. A constructive act of compassion would be to go by and to help the family. Say, hey, let me babysit for you one day. Or can I help you with some housework? Or can I take your kids to the zoo? Or can I, you know, do something? Take them on vacation or take them camping. And the lack of creative possibility thinking. Every time we hear mental retardation or someone has a mentally retarded family, the bulk of normal people go into a negative thing. Oh, that poor family. And they cannot think of any, you know, positive possibilities or creative possibilities that can come out for that family. It's how that family can sort of live together and enjoy life together and enjoy the fullness of each other. And frugality with the taxpayers' money is another attitudinal barrier. We can't afford public education for the mentally retarded. It costs 5-10 times as much to educate a mentally retarded person than it does a normal person. Let's be practical. You know, that's what the legislatures say, you know, baloney. A lack of faith. You know, how many of us really turn to God for strength and moments in dealing with retarded people, whether they be family members or neighbors or friends? And a failure to accept these people as being children of God who are just as special and unique as you and I. And all these are called attitudinal barriers that sort of keep retarded people down. Some examples of these major blocks that prohibit growth amongst retarded community are, as I said before, until recently, school districts didn't have to offer public education for mentally retarded. I think all but three or four states now, it's state law. In Arizona, a representative from the great city of Mesa, one of our nice conservative communities, nice Mormon fella, all for the family, has introduced in the legislation a rule that would take back and give each school district the right, if it wants to, offer public education or not. Gives the school district a choice. Not that the school district has to, but the school district may, if it in fact chooses. Save a few bucks this way. And that legislation is coming up in the Arizona House. We hope the federal law will go through soon and suppress any of these frugality steps that these people who have no compassion and no understanding are trying to take care of. Also, some school districts have programs that are very inferior. It's nothing more than child care or daycare. And we should be aware of that in our own communities and sort of strive to have top-notch quality programs. Talk about this potential growth. That's what we want. You don't want daycare or child care for 6 hours. And some children are placed in daycare after age 18, or they stay at home with a parent, creating situations that are unbearable for the parent. They become television freaks. They just sit there and watch TV and eat. They become very obese then, and parents have more friction between mother and the child because if mother's home all the time, the father comes home and the father says, "Why don't you clean the house?" Well, if mother's been with the kid all day long, and the mother jumps on the father, and we have a classic example of family problems. Then I shared with you another example of attitudinal boundary was a Jasper County home. We feed them, we clothe them, we keep them clean. What more do you want? Then we have precept, concepts, and opinions on retarded people. You know, we sort of, in our own mind, we are prejudiced or we're opinionated towards them. And there's lack of constructive advocacy for the rights of retarded people. We say let different agencies monitor legislation for this rather than us being really concerned. You know, how many of you have really asked, what are the laws concerning mentally retarded people in my state? You know, we say, well, we elected so-and-so to take care of that. We don't have to worry about it. And then poor laws, weak legislations. And each state has its own set of laws is another problem. Some states have very good laws, very good programs, very good legislation for retarded people, and other states that are very prehistoric. And there's a naiveness by normal people towards retarded people. We tend to be very naive. And the other thing is, the biggest one, we can talk about this a little bit if we have a couple minutes, fears and the taboos. We don't want to talk, and retarded people are repulsive. We don't want to talk about it. Fears and taboos, you know, like, you know, my wife is pregnant, so we don't want to talk about mental retardation. Because maybe talking about it, we might have a retarded child, and I'm not ready to handle that. So if we ignore it, it possibly can't happen to us. This is a fear and a taboo that normal people have.